What I want to do in the next 15 minutes is I'll tell you the three basic principles of moral psychology, which I think, and all three I think will be quite useful to you. I'll try to draw some connections, and then we'll have about 8 or 10 minutes at the end for you to ask questions. Let's see if we can brainstorm more specific ways to use these principles. So the first principle of moral psychology is that intuitions come first, strategic reasoning second. In other words, our minds are always reacting. We evaluate things within about a quarter of a second. If you see a person's face, if you hear a word, it takes around a quarter of a second for you to make an evaluation, which is, I like it or I don't like it. I want to move towards it or away from it. We also engage in reasoning. We engage in reasoning all day long, but why do we do it? Well, if you watch your reasoning, you'll see that an awful lot of it is to prepare to justify yourself for that argument that you just had with your spouse. And you spend hours going over the justifications as to why you are right and he or she is wrong. Research nowadays is really strongly suggesting that reasoning itself has an evolutionary origin, not as a tool to help us find the truth, but as a tool to help us navigate the complexities of social life and cover our asses, that is, justify our actions, persuade people that we are good and right, help our team win, that sort of stuff. You've probably heard a few psychological terms, such as the confirmation bias. Even when people don't really care about the outcome, whatever first hypothesis they come up with, they engage in thinking to support it. And it's just the human mind is just not good at looking for information on the other side. And then once you bring in motivations, like, you know, well, I'll make more money if I go this way. You have conflicts of interest, for example. And then when you bring in partisan motivations, my team has staked its prestige on global warming being false or evolution being true. Whatever your team stakes its reputation on, boy, are you motivated to reach a particular conclusion. It's a wonderful quote from Ben Franklin. He was on a ship crossing the Atlantic. He'd been a vegetarian, but he smelled some fish cooking, and he really, really wanted to have the fish. When they cut open the fish, they saw that the fish had other fish inside it, and he decided, well, if you fish eat each other, I don't see why I might not eat you. And then he said, so convenient a thing it is to be a reasonable creature, since it enables one to find or make a reason for everything one has a mind to do. So the point is, you can't really change people's minds with good reasons. A very useful little dichotomy is to know that we are usually in a mindset either of must I believe it or can I believe it. When we want to believe something, so all of you certainly want to believe that global warming is anthropogenic. I mean, I certainly believe that it is. I'm just saying that when evidence comes out one way or the other, our side here would look pretty silly if it turned out that this was, that we were all wrong. So we want to believe that it's true. The other side wants to believe that it's false. And so when evidence comes up, let's say evidence comes up, you know, oh, more glacier melt, you know, more evidence. Our side says, can I believe it? Can we believe it's true? Well, of course, you know, it was the scientist who did it. Done. We have justification. It was published in a scientific journal. But the other side is thinking, must I believe it? Am I forced to believe it? Or is there any way out of this? And you could say, oh, well, I see he once got a grant from some foundation that is on their side. Therefore, he must be biased. So I don't have to believe it anymore. This is why you can't convince people with reasons when their emotions or their intuitions go against it. A metaphor I developed in my first book, The Happiness Hypothesis, is that the mind is divided like a rider on an elephant. The rider is your conscious reasoning. The elephant is all the rest of the stuff going on in your mind. It's the automatic processes, the emotions, the intuitions. If you want to change people's minds, you need to address the elephant. If the elephant is leaning against you, away from you, there's nothing you can say to the rider. There's no argument you can give that will change them. But if you can at least neutralize, at least make the elephant not distrust you, or better yet, make appeal to the elephant so that the elephant is basically saying, can I believe it? Then persuasion is much, much easier. okay, so now let's move on. Let me just add, that's my one disagreement with George Lakoff. I think Lakoff is wonderful, and framing is extremely important, but most people in political change have read Lakoff very carefully, and I think it's just a little bit too rational, a little bit too much about mental constructs floating in space, not really taking quite enough account of the motivations that push us to accept or reject different ones. All right, second principle. There's more to morality than harm and fairness. So my original research as a social psychologist was on moral judgments about issues that are harmless but disgusting or disrespectful. So much of moral psychology was about fairness and rights and harm, and that's what everybody focused on, in part because everybody in psychology is politically liberal. There is only one known conservative in the whole field. But I was doing some work across cultures. I was working in India and other places where morality is a lot about the body and purity and pollution and sanctity and authority and group loyalty and duty. And what I found in my research is that the moral domain varies across cultures. The secular left has a relatively narrow moral domain. That's not a criticism. It's saying that they tend to base moral appeals on care and fairness. So if you see somebody suffering, a group of victims, children, animals, that is the principal foundation for left-leaning morality. Also fairness, but here fairness leans towards equality. Everybody understands proportionality, and none of us like cheaters or free riders. But what we find in our research, I do research, my main website is at yourmorals.org. You can take a variety of surveys there. What we find is that everybody says they care about fairness, but the left thinks about it more as equality of outcome. And, you know, it's terrible that, you know, America is burning all these fossil fuels and we're imposing costs on others, especially poor nations. That triggers both the CARE Foundation and the Fairness as Equality Foundation. Conservatives care a lot about fairness, but for them it's all proportionality. They're very upset by free riders, cheaters, slackers. And so, as I'm sure you've seen, one of the arguments against America doing anything is, well, China and India aren't going to do anything. So why should we sacrifice if they're not? So fairness is very important in every moral argument. The third foundation is liberty. Everybody, left and right, values liberty. But interestingly, the left sees the villain, the oppressor, typically, as corporations, the super rich, and this goes back to the progressive era in which there were terrible abuses of workers, of the environment, and the only protector, the only force that can stand up to the corporations is government. So government has always been the ally of the people to defend their liberty against oppressive corporations. That's the way it's been in America and I suppose parts of Europe for at least 100 years. But now for the right, the psychology is very similar, except it's the government which is the oppressor. They trust private industry much more than the left does, and this is crucial for this debate. I was once listening to Glenn Beck do a show on climate change, and he said, the left will tell you that it's about protecting people and animals and all of that, but it's not. It's about control. They want to regulate carbon dioxide. They want to regulate breathing. They hate cars. They hate industry. Now, there is some truth to this. When you go to left-leaning conferences, you do find lots of efforts to get people out of cars, and there is often a sense, certainly where I'm from in the academic world, there's a general ambivalence about capitalism and industry. So the right is not crazy to say that the left's real motive is to constrain industrial capitalism. For some people that on the left, that is, I think, a motive. Not for most, but I think it is there, so they're not crazy on the right to say that. Therefore, I think it's really important in appeals, if you're trying to be bipartisan, to show that you're not opposed to industry, you're not opposed to capitalism. There are so many wonderful things about capitalism and its ability to solve problems much, much better than government. We're seeing a lot of great ideas come out of Silicon Valley. If you go to TED, last year at TED, there was an amazing session on all the tech breakthroughs that really might save us. So showing that you are not anti-industry, that you're, you know, even, I mean, I'm sure this is controversial, but issues like fracking and nuclear, at least they, you know, anything that gets us off coal is really good. Now, I don't want to wade into a minefield. I'm sure you guys talk about this a lot. I'm sure you know the ups and downs much better than I do. But showing that you're not an extremist, that you're not anti-industry or anything like that is important. So that's the Liberty Foundation. Then those are the three foundations that everybody has. Now there's, and those are sometimes called the individualizing foundation. They're somewhat about protecting individuals. Then we have the three foundations that only really conservatives have, or I should say, conservatives value much more than liberals. They are loyalty, authority, and sanctity. So loyalty. Liberals are universalists. If you look at bumper stickers, you see things like, God bless the people of every nation, rather than God bless the USA. Liberals are more concerned about the people of the world in general. In some of my surveys, they say they care more about the world in general than they do about the United States. Conservatives tend to be parochial. They tend to focus on the local. Again, this is not an insult. It's just a different way of, it's where are your priorities. Conservatives tend to be much less concerned about other countries or effects on other countries. So I think, you know, whenever I talk with people on the left about strategy, I think it's very, very important to talk about American greatness. I personally think America is a great nation. I'm very patriotic. I'm so grateful that America took in my grandparents and gave us opportunities to succeed here. I think it's helpful to say, to point out that other nations are getting ahead. China and other nations are developing, and while that's great for their people, great for curing world poverty, America really has to get its act together and get more efficient. Anything you can do to sell things like the carbon tax as something that will strengthen American competitiveness, help America compete, not in a hostile way. Competition is not war. But I think there are ways of energizing conservatives that are sometimes uncomfortable for liberals. Liberals are a little, I think, more uncomfortable with emphasizing competition with other nations, but I think it's an effective strategy. The fifth foundation is authority, respect for authority. I think this one's not as relevant on climate change. The last foundation is sanctity and purity. This one's very relevant. I used to think that it was really especially the right that does this, the religious right. The idea that the body is a temple, all this regulation of sexuality that you see in the Bible, you know, Christian conservatives are so concerned with sex, but not just because of its practical effects, but it is the idea that something is being defiled, a woman's sanctity or purity or virginity is being defiled. All that way of talking is this psychology of purity and pollution, which you find in most traditional cultures. You find it all over the Old Testament, Hindu scriptures, Islam. So it's very deep in human psychology. But what you often see on the environmental movement is that people on the left can do it too, and you see them doing this especially around the environment. The hallmark of sanctity thinking is that it is not utilitarian. So if you can convince people, or if you can argue to people that some policy, say fracking, for example, if you could convince them that actually it's best off overall or best off for the environment, if they still resist because, my God, it's just so upsetting to think about injecting chemicals and poisons into Mother Earth, that's an example of sanctity thinking on the left, on the environmental side. So this is an issue for both sides. Typically, it's more endorsed by the right. But I think some parts of the environmental movement are motivated by sanctity, which is not a bad thing. I think it's great to treat Mother Earth as sacred. Unfortunately, sacredness means no trade-offs. It means you become less flexible in negotiations. So I think it's something that the left has to watch out for, and the climate change movement has to watch out for. All right, we just have two more minutes for me to talk. I'll just mention the third principle is morality binds and blinds. Morality isn't just about how I treat you. Morality is this amazing human evolutionary achievement by which we got the ability to bind ourselves into groups. Religion was a big part of this. Whenever you find evidence of early civilizations, you always find temples. The way that humans were able to come together in groups larger than family was by making something sacred, typically a rock or a tree or a river or an ancestor, and then we circle around it, often literally circle around it. And when we circle around something with other people, that binds us together. We can work as a team and we can trust each other. Sports teams do exercises together. They have all kinds of rituals. The military does it. And political movements do it. So it makes you trust each other, but it makes you go blind to anything that contradicts your group's social construction, your group's view of reality. It's very easy to see this on the other side. Just to take one example, creationists, in this day and age, to say that the Earth is 5,000 years old is bizarre. But there are some people who do it because their team is so tightly bound that they go blind to any contradictory evidence. I think there is some danger of this happening in some parts of the left and the environmental movement, because it truly is such an important cause, and the fate of the world really is hanging on us making the right choices. So activists of all stripes, whenever they come together, you know, good for them that they have the passion to work for the cause, but you have to be careful that morality and binding together in a team, it makes you lose flexibility and open-mindedness. It binds you together. I think this is a big issue. As I understand it, the polling data on global warming, I once saw a presentation from a political scientist who graphed it all out. In the 90s, of course, Democrats have always cared about it more than Republicans, but the lines were going up together at the same time. And they're sort of going up and up and up. And then in 2006, when Al Gore's movie comes out, that's when the lines diverge. When it was always more of an issue on the left, but once it became one of the premier issues on the left, suddenly the concern about global warming jumps up on the left, and it actually then goes down on the right. So again, morality binds and blinds. Unfortunately, climate change is now one of the preeminent issues of the American culture war, and that's why America can't make much progress on it or is having such trouble compared to other nations. So anything that scrambles the categories, that brings in business leaders or the military or insurance companies or any other sort of not obviously lefty group to make it clear that this isn't just a left-right issue, anything that can get it out of the center of the American culture war will make it easier to recruit people on the right.